Welcome or welcome back to Whores for Whore. I'm Mariah.
And I'm Kayla.
And this week, we are going back to our roots with a retelling of the haunted story of the Dybbuk box.
I hate this box.
What? Also, this episode is being recorded on October 1st because we're stacking episodes. However, it is coming out during the High Holy Spooky season.
What?
So we hope you guys are having a rockin' time. Oh, wait. A haunted time. So let's get into the Dybbuk box. So a lot of this is going to be the direct retelling of our main character's story. His name is Kevin, because he posted this box for sale on eBay. So a lot of this is a retelling of, like I said, his story. So thank you, Kevin.
Does anyone use eBay anymore?
I think some people do for, like, what are those things? Like baseball cards, Yu-Gi-Oh cards, weird stuff. Old people still.
Got it.
In September of 2001, a man named Kevin Manis was visiting estate sales in search of items for his furniture restoration business in Portland, Oregon.
Of course it's in Portland, A. Mm-hmm. And B, estate sales?
I like those.
Have you ever been?
Yeah, I've been to two. Let me correct that. I've only been to two. But you get to, like, creep on people's stuff, which I love to creep on people. So
I want to go. I've never been.
Yeah, you just find them. And then you can just go and walk through people's houses and choose what you want.
I don't want to go. If they're willing to sell it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, don't go by yourself. Oh, my God. No. The estate sale that Kevin stumbled upon was at the home of a woman named Havila, which is a very pretty name. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, though, I saw that it was spelled H-A-V-E-L-A, and I've always seen Havila spelled as H-A-V-I-L-L-A-H, so I just thought it was, like, interesting.
You've seen this name before?
I deployed with someone named Havila. That was our first name. First name. That's weird for a first name, right? And when I first, I was like, oh, that's really pretty. And then I was like, wait a minute. Is your family all religious? I mean, she's really nice, but. Sadly, just a few days prior to the estate sale, Havila had passed away at the age of 103. Jeez. And her family was running the sale to prepare to put the house on the market. Kayla, you can jab with that. Putting a house on the market?
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, they're trying to sell it. Within, like, 6 months or something.
But, yeah. Geez, talk about 103.
I know. Like, what? That's a long time.
Yeah, she's a centurion.
Oh, is that what that's called?
Yeah, she made it to a century. Like a blue zone. I watched that show on Netflix.
How
did you watch
it?
That?
I didn't watch it. I was like,
it's okay. It's okay. I'm only two episodes in, but it's okay.
Yeah, what do they do to live that long?
So as Kevin strolled through Havila's home, a small wooden wine cabinet caught his eye. He immediately scooped it up along with a small sewing box and went to pay. As he was paying, Havila's granddaughter said, quote, I see you bought the Dybbuk box. Kevin, unfamiliar with the term, asked her to explain what a Dybbuk box was. However, the woman did not explain it, but rather detailed Havila's life.
That's sketch.
I know. Why are you skirting the question, sister?
Yeah, but also, if you weren't going to answer the question, why even
say it? Yeah. I know. So Havila's granddaughter went on to explain that Havila lived a life that many would call remarkable. She was originally from Poland. However, when the Nazis invaded, she and her entire family were forced into a concentration camp. Sadly, Havila was the only member of her family to survive after she escaped the camp with a few other prisoners. Havila's parents, brothers, sister, husband, two sons, and one daughter were all murdered by the Nazis. Eventually, Havila made her way to Spain, where she lived until the end of World War II. During that time, she acquired the small wine cabinet, and it was one of only three items that she brought when she immigrated to the United States.
Mm.
The other two were a steamer trunk and the sewing box that was in Kevin's other hand.
Oh, so we got two of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they sell, if those are the three things that she brought with her from Spain, why would they have those for sale in the estate sale? I wouldn't.
No, but I don't own a haunted family heirloom, so.
Yeah, true. I mean, yeah, I'd probably get rid of that one, but like the other two.
The sewing box? Yeah, I would have kept that since it's not haunted. Yeah. I don't know. No appreciation for history. God, no. So after paying, Kevin again asked her granddaughter, Havila's granddaughter, to explain what a Dybbuk box was. The granddaughter explained that growing up, Havila kept the wine cabinet locked away in her sewing room and always called it the Dybbuk box. When the granddaughter asked her what it was, Havila would spit three times through her fingers and say a Dybbuk or a Kiselim. That might be the incorrect pronunciation. I'm sorry. Havila told the girl that under no circumstances was the wine cabinet ever to be opened. In fact, Havila was so determined to keep others from it that she insisted she be buried with the cabinet. However, seeing as her and her family were devout Jews, this request was not honored as it goes against the rules of an Orthodox Jewish burial.
Okay.
Also, that's like such like a like Jewish grandmother thing to spit like like between your fingers three times, like isn't whenever like anything word bad.
Evil or something?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you say like, "Oh, I'm really scared to get in a car crash," you're supposed to be like put 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 and like spit, like ward it off. Our family thing is like knock on wood, which I feel like is pretty common in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I've heard of knock on wood too, and I'm from the South.
No, I feel, I'm sorry, like a Southern Midwest thing. Like, knock on wood, I feel like is pretty common, you know?
There's other cultures that do the whole spit thing.
I also knock on my head if there's no wood.
I've heard of that, but I don't.
I'm superstitious about that stuff, so if I was Jewish, I too would be like, put, put, put.
You know, some people, when they go through, like, traffic lights, they put their hand up on the seat, or, like, the roof of the car or something, or they, like, knock three times on the roof of the car.
Why?
It's like a superstition that like you're supposed to do it as you go through an intersection to keep you safe.
Oh, whoa. Every time? That's a lot of knocking. Jesus.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, I can't
or
do
maybe
that.
Maybe it's only through a yellow light. I don't really remember, but I know I was in a car with somebody and they did that. And I was like, what are you doing? But this is a long time ago. I don't even remember who that was.
Huh. I do that in a yellow light because I could see how that's dangerous, you know? Zooming through. If someone else is zooming on the other side, that's dangerous.
Yeah, it probably was a yellow light. Thing, yeah.
So according to Kevin, he and Havila's granddaughter spent more time talking, kind of like getting to know each other, before he finally offered to let her keep what many, you know, what others, including you, Caleb, would call a sentimental keepsake.
Mm-hmm.
However, at this point, the woman became very insistent and said something along the lines of, "No, no, you bought it. Go ahead and take the wine cabinet."
Hmm.
Kevin, who was probably thinking that the woman needed money, explained that he didn't want his money back and she could see it as like, you know, a donation and a gesture of his kindness. At this point, the granddaughter became so upset that she yelled at Kevin stating, "You bought it, you made a deal," before crying and asking Kevin to leave with the items that he purchased.
That's just such a weird interaction.
Yeah, and so at the time, Kevin, in his eBay post, was like, "Yeah, I politely took the items and left, like the good boy that I am." But then he was like, "Yeah, that's pretty weird."
Yeah.
No shit, Kevin! So that day, Kevin took the box to his repair shop and put it in his basement workshop. Along the way home, he decided that the wine box would make the perfect gift for his mother's approaching birthday. But before then, it just needed, like, a little TLC, so it went in the shop.
But didn't she just tell you that the grandmother said, under no circumstances should this be opened?
Mm-hmm. What can I say? Mediocre man.
Why are you opening it? Like, just listen. She lived to be 103. I think she knows something.
Yeah, she's got some good ideas. Kevin opened his store as normal and went about his day until one of his employees, a young woman that had worked there for nearly 2 years, arrived at work. Kevin greeted her, you know, as usual, and then left the store to run a few errands. However, about 30 minutes later, Kevin received a phone call from the female employee who was screaming that someone was in the basement workshop breaking glass and yelling.
Good Lord.
Furthermore, she was unable to leave the store because the intruder had managed to lock the security gates and emergency exit. As Kevin was telling her, you know, hang up, call the police, his phone died. So he immediately flipped a U-ey and drove back to the shop, allegedly hitting speeds of over 100 miles an hour, probably knocking on those yellow lights.
Mm-hmm.
So that he was safe. So according to Kevin, he arrived back at the store. He didn't tell us how he got in, but somehow he got in. And he found the employee on the floor in the corner of his office sobbing hysterically. Kevin made sure she was not injured and then ran to the basement to confront the intruder. At the bottom of the stairs, he was hit by the unmistakable smell of cat urine, which, yep, I know what that smells like all too well.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely know what that smells like. It smells like cat. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
As he tried to flip on the lights, they did not work, leaving Kevin in complete darkness. So Kevin, like, you know, did a quick look around in the dark and he found no one there.
Mm-hmm.
Later, he recalled that all the light bulbs in the shop had been shattered, including like the overhead ones and small lamp ones that were on the desk. Also, because there was no intruder, it was weird because it would have been impossible for someone to leave because there was only one way in and one way out, the stairs from the upstairs shop.
Yeah.
So after, you know, looking around quickly, Kevin went back upstairs to speak with the employee, but she was already gone. So he probably, like, opened it, saw she was good, and she said bye when he took off, which, same.
So wait. That means that he most likely, like, unlocked the gates and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm assuming. Is that he, like, somehow had the outside key, unlocked it, and came in.
Yeah. Weird.
The employee never returned to work. She ended up quitting her job and still refuses to talk about the incident. At the time, Kevin never correlated, you know, the events of bringing the box home and what appeared to be a robbery. And so after reporting it to the police, he went on with his life as normal.
Yeah.
Hiring another employee.
True.
So about 2 weeks after the incident, Kevin began refinishing the cabinet for his mother. He discovered that the wine box had... Okay, he called it a unique mechanism, but it sounds pretty basic to me.
Yeah.
It sounds like when you open one cabinet door, the other cabinet door opens up with it and a drawer pops out, which, like, okay, cool.
Okay.
Anyway, Kevin did that. And inside the cabinet, he discovered one 1928 U.S. wheat penny, a 1925 U.S. wheat penny, one small lock of blonde hair bound with a string, a small lock of dark hair also bound with a string, a tiny granite statue engraved with Hebrew letters which spell out the word shalom, a dried rosebud, a golden wine cup, and a black cast iron candlestick holder with octopus legs.
Okay.
Which is like a weird assortment.
Yes.
Kevin took all of these items and set them aside, later intending to return them to Havila's family. So he finished cleaning, refurbishing the wine box, whatever, moved on with his life.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to skip forward to October 31st, 2001, which is also known as Halloween, which is the best holiday of the year. Kevin's mother came by the shop to celebrate her birthday. So this is like a month after Kevin has bought the mm-hmm. wine box. The two went out for lunch and came back to his shop so that his mother could pick up her present. While she was examining her new gift, Kevin stepped outside to make a phone call. No more than 5 minutes later, an employee came sprinting up to him, telling him that something was wrong with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin went back inside and found her sitting in a chair next to the cabinet with no expression and tears streaming down her face. When Kevin shook and yelled at his mother, she did not respond. Ultimately, Kevin called an ambulance, and she was taken to the hospital where doctors discovered that she suffered a stroke and had lost her ability to speak and form words.
Jeez.
Yeah. Fortunately, though, the stroke only affected her ability to speak, so she could still communicate by writing and was still, mm-hmm. like, coherent.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness. When Kevin visited her the next day and asked her how she was doing, according to him, she began to tear up and spelled out "no gift." Thinking that his mother had forgotten about his gift because of her stroke, Kevin was just like, "No, I bought you a gift. Don't worry. Once we get home, like, I'll bring it to your house." But she became more upset and spelled out "hate gift." Kevin, you know, who hasn't correlated that the wine box is evil at this point, laughed and thought she was joking, so he said he would buy her whatever she wants once she got better. Once again, Kevin wrote this off as a freak accident and moved on with his life.
Well, he's just intelligent.
So, next, Kevin thought the wine box would be a good gift for his sister.
Good.
However, after a week later, she returned it, stating that the doors would not stay closed.
Mm-hmm.
He then gave the wine cabinet to his brother and sister-in-law.
Why?
But after just 3 days, they returned it, insisting it smelled like cat urine. Burp.
Look, that's 1, 2, 3, 4 different instances that have occurred with this box. And even if you didn't correlate the first one, that's at least 3 different instances within your family. Like, everyone in your family does not like it. I think that maybe you should think about, I don't think we should keep this.
Mm-hmm, I agree. But Kevin did not. So he thought it'd be a good idea to sell it in his store. It was sold to what Kevin described as a nice, middle-aged couple, but just days after purchasing it, he returned to work to find the box on his shop's doorsteps with a note that read, quote, "This has a bad darkness."
Okay, so that would just spelled it out for you.
They said it's bad, don't keep it. But Kevin's so gonna keep it.
That's how many different people who have instantly, within a few days, put it together. And here you are, a month and a half later, still clueless.
Not putting it together. But
not have critical thinking skills.
No. But in his defense, at this point, he's like, okay, why the hell does nobody want this thing?
Right.
It's so perfectly good. No.
No, he's not perfectly good. It's not perfectly good, Kevin. If nobody wants it, it's not perfectly good. There's something wrong with it. You're just not seeing it.
Yep. And but Kevin brought it home.
Of course he did.
And after bringing it home, Kevin began to have a reoccurring nightmare. According to Kevin, quote, "The dream goes something like this. I find myself walking with a friend, usually someone I know well and trust at some point in the dream. I find myself looking into the eyes of the person I am with, only to realize that there is something different, something evil looking back at me. At that point in my dream, the person I am with changes into what can only be described as the most gruesome, demonic-looking hag I have ever seen. The hag proceeds to then beat the living tar out of me, I have awakened numerous times to find bruises and marks on myself where I had been hit during the previous night. Still, I never related the nightmares to the cabinet, nor do I think that I ever would have. End quote.
But why?
Well, fortunately for Kevin, he does eventually link the nightmares to the cabinet. This came after a few weeks of, you know, enduring the nightmares and having it in his home. Kevin's sister, brother, and sister-in-law all came over to spend the night. So, you know, everyone's that has had the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
At breakfast the next morning, Kevin's sister began to complain that she'd been having a horrible nightmare and had once again had it last night. His sister went on to explain the exact same nightmare that Kevin had been having, and once she finished, his brother and sister-in-law sat at the table frozen in shock. They too admitted that they had experienced a nightmare, and it happened to be the exact same one. Eventually, all four individuals realized that their nightmares began shortly after they brought the wine box into their home. And according to Kevin, after the family's discovery of the box of the box's dark nature, all hell started to break loose. Allegedly, Kevin began to see what he described as shadows in the corner of his eye. And one night, Kevin had tried to move the box to an outside storage unit, but was later awoken to a smoke alarm going off. After investigating, you know, why the alarm went off in the unit, Kevin discovered no smoke and no fire, but there was the unmistakable smell of cat urine. Kevin went back inside to do some research and noted that it smelled like cat piss even in his own home. While looking online, Kevin eventually fell asleep and suffered from the same nightmare of the hag. Around 4:30, Kevin woke up to feel something breathing down his neck, later stating that when he opened his eyes, a huge shadow on all fours sprinted away from him.
Why? Like, why do they have to be on all fours? Like,
yeah, that's the scariest part. In June 2003, Kevin posted the Dybbuk box for sale on eBay, detailing the story that I just told you. His post ended by stating, quote, "I would destroy this thing in a second, except I really don't have an understanding of what I may or may not be dealing with. I am afraid, and I do mean afraid, that if I destroy the cabinet, whatever that seems to have come with the cabinet may just stay here with me. I have been told that there are people who shop on eBay that understand these kind of things and specifically look for these items. If you are one of those people, please, please, please buy this cabinet and do whatever you do with the thing like this. Help me." End quote. That's pretty fucking scary, that ending, in my opinion.
Yeah. But he had it for 2 years?
Yeah. 2 years.
So he's been dealing with that shit for 2 years.
2 years. So he bought it in, you know, September 2001, so, like, 9/11, so I don't know if, like, maybe that, like, paused life or something, but, yeah, your face, yeah, when I was going back, I was like, damn, he bought this thing when, not, you know, new 9/11, theory. Shit.
The Dybbuk box cost 9/11, because he opened the fucking box.
Yeah, you looked at me like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. So Kevin posted the cabinet for sale for just $140, where it was eventually purchased by a Missouri college student named Losef. Losef quickly placed the box back on sale just 7 months after he purchased it, and his ad labeled the cabinet as a, quote, "haunted Jewish wine cabinet box," end quote.
I don't think you need cabinet and box in the same sentence, but yeah.
Gosh, double negative. Not really, but...
Might as well be.
In the description, Losef wrote, quote, I very strongly do not want this box anymore.
I very strongly do not want this box.
I know, I'm like, wow, very strongly. Losev blamed the box for sleeping problems, car troubles, and light bulbs burning throughout his home. Then there are even weirder issues where he stated, quote, I started seeing things, sort of like large vertical dark blurs in my peripheral vision. I smell something like juniper bushes or stinky ammonia in my garage, and I have no idea what from. Most disturbingly, last Tuesday, my hair began to fall out. Today, Friday, it's about half gone. I'm in my early 20s, and I just got a clean blood test back from the doctors. Maybe it's stress-related. I don't know. End quote. What?
But, Losev, you read the description when you bought the box from eBay.
Yeah, you can't be shocked when a haunted thing's gonna haunt. What the hell? So, after seeing Losev's eBay post, a man named Joseph Haxton purchased the box. Joseph, who worked as a university museum curator, claims that he had been contacted by countless authors, directors, documentary crews, rabbis, and Hebrew intellectuals who all hoped to crack the box's mysteries. Haxton claims that he had to unlist his home phone number, change his email address, and create an entire website dedicated to fielding inquiries about the box. Fortunately, Joseph, along with an Orthodox Jewish bookkeeper named Rebecca Edery, were able to uncover what they believe was the purpose of the box. According to the two, the wine box had been... Oh my god, okay. There they are again! The thing! I'm sorry, is that... What? Oh, viewers, the balloons just popped up. Oh my god, I'm freaking out.
Your hands were in the air and my hands were under
I know, literally in the air. I'm freaking out.
Okay. What is happening?
I'm spooked, officially. Rebecca and Joseph theorize that the wine box was sacred and was intentionally stuffed with a malevolent spirit in order to trap it. They theorize that in order to put an end to the misfortune, the box likely needed an Orthodox Jewish burial. However, unsurprisingly, that did not happen. So Joseph Haxton kept possession of the box from 2004 to 2017 until he decided to pass the box on to paranormal investigator and host of Ghost Adventurers. Baggins. Exactly, Dr. Bill. Yeah, Baggins. Who we spoke about in our last episode, so that's just strange.
Because you prepped this again, so I thought you just had him in the back of your brain.
No.
Really?
Yeah, that's weird.
That is weird.
So after receiving the haunted box, Baggins placed it in his haunted museum that is located in Las Vegas. Shortly after its arrival, the museum staff started to report that, quote, mysterious protruding holes began to appear in the walls around the artifact as if something was trying to break out from the exhibit.
Weird.
In June 2018, rapper Post Malone was visiting the museum, and during that time, Baggins decided to remove the box from its plexiglass case and physically touch it.
Of course.
He later revealed in an interview that, quote, oh, did you just comment that?
Yeah.
Okay, that's scary. I was like, oh my god.
I was trying to see how it was happening.
I know, how does it do that? Later revealed in an interview that, quote, I felt all the fear you've had in your life all at once in one concentration of energy. It was horrific, end quote. And although Post Malone never actually touched the Dybbuk box, he put his hand on Zach's shoulder while Zach was in direct contact with it.
But why?
Apparently, this was enough for him to become the next target. Just 2 months later, in August of 2018, two of the tires on Malone's private jet mysteriously blew while taking off. The plane reportedly had to circle the sky before being able to make an emergency landing. Next, in September of 2018, three armed robbers broke into the San Fernando Valley home that had been recently sold by Post Malone. The attackers reportedly beat one of the homeowners while repeatedly shouting, "Where's Post Malone?" A week later, Malone was involved in a car accident in West Hollywood. According to police, Malone's assistant was driving the rapper's Rolls Royce while Malone was in the passenger seat. Fortunately, everyone survived and no one was majorly hurt. Wow, what am I saying? So for listeners interested in viewing the Dybbuk box, it is currently at Zach Bagans' Haunted Museum and is included in the tour. The minimum age requirement is 16, and you must sign a waiver before physically viewing the cabinet. Be warned, though, many guests have reported feeling drained of energy upon seeing the box, and a few have even fainted. Mm-hmm. And that is the haunted tale of the Dybbuk box.
Great.
What? Halloween. This is Halloween.
I think we should just seal the box in cement and move on from it.
Bury it. I think we should give it a proper burial and move on.
Yeah.
That's what it deserves.
Yeah, why hasn't Bagans done that?
Leave the Dybbuk alone. No.
Because then he wouldn't make any money.
Yep, that's exactly right. Uh-huh. That was episode 2 of our High Holy Spooky Season, and we hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks for an undecided case yet. Again. Oh my god, there's a balloon!
I cannot. What? How?
Something must be happening. I'm freaked out.
Okay, let's Google it really quickly. Balloons showing up in the background of teams 41 days ago. There's only one comment.
I know, and I see it on Reddit.
Yeah.
The balloons are a FaceTime reaction. Oh, man.
Either you, possibly a keyboard shortcut if you're not clicking it, or someone else is using that reaction, but neither of us are using the reaction.
No.
Meeting organizers can disable reactions under meeting settings.
I would rather live under the presumption that this is a haunted podcast.
I believe it is.
That is the only conclusion.
Correct.
Haunted AF, bro.
Yeah.
So if you like haunted shit, come back in 2 weeks.
Exactly. What other podcast is haunted? Probably none.
Not any others.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see you guys next time.
Okay, bye.
Bye.